It's the 680 CJOB Sports Show podcast. A little hockey and some football for you. Marshall Ferguson has his first CFL mock draft. Curious to get his thoughts on what the Bombers will be looking for in this year's draft as they look to make it to a fifth straight Grey Cup. And Jim Toth, the host of the Jim Toth Show and Jets at Noon, on his conversation with GM Kevin Schevel day off. And what should the Jets do down the stretch, these final six games? Go for that second place spot or rest their players for the playoffs?
Hurry, hurry, step right up. Introducing the star of our show. His name is Usher. You wouldn't want to be anywhere else in the world right now. So without further ado, I bring to you Usher.
Yes. It would not be an interview with my friend Marshall Ferguson if I didn't bring back his favorite song of all time. How are you, sir?
I can't believe you were able to pry that away from your former employer. How did that happen? I mean, what were the negotiations like to get that song to come with you?
Oh, yeah. No, here's the thing. If your boss doesn't listen to your show, then you can do whatever you want. Honestly, you know that, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, well, that was my whole thing when I worked on TSN 1150 in Hamilton, DT, was, as you know from our conversations, my boss wasn't listening to anything we did, which is why we basically did anything we wanted for about 7 years. And then they said, no, we're good. We're good. And then we all moved on and we went to different things. But it's good to be on with you, buddy. By the way, Ovi, I heard in your sports update there, 45 goals. He's just lingering, eh?
Just
hanging around. Just it refuses to go away. I talked to a couple of people a couple of weeks ago when I was down south at the Daytona 200 covering motorcycle racing for TSM, where they had different kind of hands in on the Capitals, whether it be betting odds or if it were, people that were affiliated with the Capitals that were agents that were down hanging out at the motorcycle race and all the rest. And they were basically just like, yeah, he just refuses to go away. He's just going to stay here until he gets this thing done.
Well, if I had two more years after this at $9.5 million, I'd hang around too. Come on.
Not a bad deal, is it?
Not bad at all. I wanted to ask Marshall Ferguson about his mock draft. The CFL put this out there, Marsh, today on their website. The last five number one picks in the Canadian Football League drafts, and you're probably saying them in your head as I say them, but they were Dante Bull, Tyrell Richards, Jake Burt, Jordan Williams, and Shane Richards. And I look at that list and go, well, Jake Burt's not in the league anymore. Dante Bull had a real rough time. Tyrell Richards is a depth and special teams player. Jordan Williams, teams attack him pretty religiously in the passing game. And Shane Richards, I don't think, is in the league anymore. And it leads me to, I don't know how any of the GMs do a good draft, because it's got to be so tough in the CFL.
100%. And it's part of the reason that we were texting earlier today and I told you that doing mock drafts for the CFL is infuriating and it absolutely drives me crazy year over year. And I still decide to do it. And the reason for that is I believe that doing a thought experiment on something that makes you incredibly frustrated is probably good for your mental health. So I willingly dive into this thing and give it a shot every year. And then, I do this one, which is basically the first three rounds, and basically for the last 5 years, when it comes to my next mock draft, which will come out a few days before the CFL draft, which is April 30th, they say to me, okay, just do, three, four, five rounds, something like that, whatever you can do. And I always, always, always in the month of April get so addicted to this terrible process that I give them all 72 picks. They don't even want them. I basically just say, like, here, this is the whole thing. And it's because I spend basically every year in the month of April going back through watching film. I use the combine almost as a starting point to try and understand who these players are. And then from there, it's like you get an understanding, you get the athletic profile, because let's be real, there is a base minimum athleticism that you have to have that is displayed by testing at the CFL combine or through pro days that are happening all throughout the United States and the NCAA guys, that you will be able to use that as, okay, these are the top 100 players, essentially, is what I narrow it down to from the draft list that can be 300, 400 players deep. This is the top 100. You combine production with athleticism, and then you start to refine from there, and it becomes, let me watch a little bit of game tape on this positional group. And when you watch year over year over year over year, despite the fact that I'm not one of those fancy people who has taken a scouting class or has done, the certifications on this or that, the other thing that tells you that you can be a scout or you can work your way up through general manager programs and all the rest, I've watched enough football in my life to be able to watch players in different positional groups and understand base fundamentals, understanding of what they are good at, what they are not, what's good about them, what's strange about them. And that's why I love the mock draft process and trying to figure out what these guys are actually going to turn into. Because as you say, it's incredibly difficult. And the thing that I find so fun about this, to be honest, is the first draft, or the first round, I should say, in the draft, I honestly think that a lot of general managers reach in the first round. And the reason that they do that, and obviously people listening to the show know what that term means, is to reach is to go and try and find something that might not be there. Well, it's potential, or we might get them in-house, or whatever it is. And the reason that I love the draft is when we get to the second round, that's the U Sports kids. And I'm not going to say that I have U Sports bias, but the reality is I played in it when it was CIS, and I see so many times going through the history of this, picks 10 to 15 are the players that really help your roster. There are the occasional times where you get a Philpott and he makes the game-winning touchdown catch for you like the Montreal Alouettes in the first round. Sure. You get, as you said in those first picks, Tyrell Richards, he goes off and goes crazy for you at various times and, you know, gets a pick six against the Winnipeg Blue Bombers on one of the first plays of the game and on and on and on. But it's a lot of the time the players that are there for you that dress for 15 of your 18 regular season games that make an impact on your roster, they're the ones that really matter. And they're often taken in the second and the third rounds. So I love the science of it because, yes, it's infuriating, it's difficult, it's challenging. Every single person in the CFL will tell you that. However, if you can make the right decisions, not just in round one and not have a bust, but make the great decisions in rounds two and rounds three, I honestly think that's how you win Grey Cup championships in this league.
Yeah, I could buy that 100%. As you look at, we're the home of the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. As you look at the Bombers and you see a roster with, you know, potentially 9 Canadian starting spots, but they don't have a fullback currently on the roster. They get Tyrell Ford back from the NFL, potentially taking a defensive back spot. Couple of receivers, 3 offensive linemen, though they let Jeff Gray get out. What do you think? If you're the Bombers, what are you looking at in the draft and maybe high in the draft?
Yeah, the Bombers are an interesting one for me this year because the prototypical model for them over the last, I would say, 5 or 6 years has been you try and obviously re-sign your core and then add at whatever positions you feel are deficient, which is your typical draft model. But then when I started looking back through at the numbers today and even the draft history of it, the Winnipeg Blue Bombers right now, in terms of draft picks that are still currently on their roster that have been drafted since 2017, I always use these kind of 5-6 year windows because if you go beyond 5 years, the reality is if you're a Canadian player and you're still in the CFL playing for the same team that you were when you got drafted, that's an anomaly. It's the average career of a CFL player is you're looking somewhere between 5 to 8 years. So I always kind of go 6 years as a median, if you will, in those situations. And Winnipeg has the 7th ranking when it comes to players that are still on their roster that have been drafted over the last 6 years. They have retained 29.4% of their draft picks that are still actually on their roster. I think getting Tyrell Ford back is actually huge because I talked to a couple of people during the U Sports season who saw him actually helping out with the Waterloo Warriors on their coaching staff late last fall after he was let go by the Packers. And I said, you know, why is he not playing in the CFL right now? And they said, he's basically playing hardball. He wants to try and figure out where he's going, what he's going to get paid, what his role is going to be. And, you know, he might be requesting looking at different places or can you guys help me get to somewhere where I can play immediately? And for him to finally put all of that behind him and say, I'm going back to the place that drafted me, I think that's huge. I think that's fantastic. I think he's going to have an amazing year. I really do, because he's an incredible athlete, a great football player. Anybody who watches Trey knows that family knows football. They understand it. So I think that's a big one for you. But to answer your question specifically about needs, it's such a funny spot because you and I have kind of talked casually about the idea of Jackson Jeffcoat not being around at that other defensive end spot opposite Willie. And I'm not here to say that they're going to start a Canadian on the opposite defensive end because that's not the reality. I don't think that they're going to go. But if you look back at draft history, and again, this is why I track these things to try and figure out, okay, how long has it been since you've taken a player at a certain position? For example, just before I get to Winnipeg, I looked at Toronto earlier today and you start going, okay, they got themselves Curley Gittens Jr., absolute home run. He's gone. You traded him to Edmonton. Since then, Dijon Brissett, yes, you got him with your second overall pick back in 2020. Then you end up going with some depth guys for a couple of years. Tommy Neal has turned into a player after being drafted 30th overall, but yeah, he's not a superstar kind of thing. They didn't draft a receiver at all in 2022. They went with Jared Wayne with their second round pick because they didn't have a first round pick in 2023. He's still with the Houston Texans. You start to think, okay, well, the Houston Texans just got Stephon Diggs. They got Tank Dell. They got a ton of receivers that are there in Houston. Jared Wayne's not likely to get a lot of playing time. Is he going to be happy staying on the practice roster? Does he want to come north? So for me, it's like I start going, well, if Jared Wayne's going to stay down with the Houston Texans, the Toronto Argonauts are a prime team to maybe take a look at a receiver. The Winnipeg Blue Bombers, when I go through their draft history and I try to figure out how long has it been since you've taken a player or you have a need, or receiver could be one of those. And yeah, this is a super, super deep receiver group. And the reason that I say that is when I went through and made my combine rankings in terms of athletic performance, there was not a single receiver in the 13 receiver group at the CFL combine who tested in what I kind of call the elite category, which is above the 80th percentile when you average out all of their athletic testing. But every single member of this receiving group that was there, 13 people, tested between 60th percentile and 80th percentile, which means if you are the Toronto Argonauts or the Winnipeg Blue Bombers and you're taking a receiver in, like I just talked about, the second, the third, the fourth, the fifth round, you're probably getting a better receiver in the fourth round than in previous years you've potentially gotten in the second or the third. So there's depth in this draft. You might have a need. You lose Brendan O'Leary, Orange, obviously, Reed, and see going over to Hamilton. And when I see those things start to play out, it's like, yes, you do have Dembski. You do have Olatarski. But what else do you want to backfill it with? How do you start developing? How do you find out what players are about if you don't have them inside your own system? So receiver's one for me. And the other one is defensive line. I always laugh at, like I said off the top, in the last 2 years alone, Winnipeg has drafted 5 defensive linemen. And many of them have been defensive tackles in the effort to finally replace Jake Thomas. I don't know how Jake is still doing it. He is incredible.
He's crushing it.
When he was in university at Acadia, I was at McMaster. We played them in a UTEC Bowl back in 2011. I've been covering CFL games for 7 years, and he's still playing in the league. That tells you the extent of our ability as players. And I love the fact that it's always defensive tackle, depth defensive tackle, and you cannot get Jake Thomas off the field. So I think that might be one that they try to backfill at once again. Jeff Gray, obviously being on offensive line, is interesting. Liam Dobson has made that a little bit softer of a landing spot, but O-line, D-line, receiver, I think that's where Kyle Walters is looking.
I like it. Marshall's mock draft at CFL.ca. Kyle Hergill, offensive lineman, Boston College in the first round. Dell Duncan Busby, wide receiver in the second round. Defensive lineman Justin Sambu with their Canadian pick in the late in the second round. You should check it out at CFL.ca. He's got another mock draft coming up a couple days ahead of the draft, but it's very good stuff, dude. I don't know how you do it. It's great stuff, and I learn a ton from reading your writing there. I appreciate you giving me some time, brother.
Awesome. Thanks, DT. Appreciate you. Have some fun, okay?
Yeah, will do. He is a Marshall Ferguson. CFL.ca. He's got his mock draft 1.0 up right now. He is Jim Toth, who I have seen so many times this week. I'm so happy with being in the office, brother.
It's just great. It's like there's a whole new aura around the office at DT, and it's nice to see you. It's nice to be seen, and it's nice to be on with you.
Yeah, and now I'll just go away until January and work from the stadium, and I'll see you then. Toth, are you surprised we've not heard anything about Martin Pospisil's elbow that he chucked at Josh Morrissey and got ejected for last night?
No, and yes. I mean, how the Department of Player Safety works is beyond me, to be honest. I'm surprised something didn't come out to say we're going to look at this. And I'm surprised mostly because it's his fourth time, right, that he's been tossed from a game. So It was a five in a game for sure. I think he left his feet, and I think he brought the elbow up. I just think he was playing. That's how he plays, if that makes sense. I don't think he's a guy who came over the boards and goes, I'm going to get somebody, and started headhunting. But I am, I'm not surprised we haven't heard. I think we are going to hear, in short order. But I'm also a little surprised that because it's his fourth time, we haven't heard, if that makes sense. Like, if this is his first time and there's six games left, it wouldn't surprise me. The fact that this is his fourth time in 1 year, I'm surprised the Department of Player Safety, because that's what it's about, right? It's a lot of this is optics.
Yeah.
And I think they, with a guy for the fourth time being tossed from a game, you would want to be all over that compared to a guy that, I remember when Josh Morrissey a couple of years ago hit a Bruin from behind, and he had a hearing, and it was his first infraction, I think, at any level of hockey. And they just come out and they're like, okay, he's going to have a meeting and stuff. And so it's ominous, not ominous. It's surprising they haven't said anything. But then again, there's six games left in Calgary season. They're not making the playoffs. I don't think they're in a big rush to do anything, but. So surprised, but not surprised.
Yeah, slide it out in a Friday news dump. The NHL is great at Friday news dumps, and yet they...
Well, maybe it's coming, DT, right? At about 8 p.m. tonight.
Their Friday night news dump might be even better.
The city of New York going, as soon as Iowa and UConn tip off, send this.
Yes, that's a very good point. They could get a lot of cover from the second women's game to come. You and Braden had Kevin Cheveldayoff on Jets at Noon today. What did you take away from the conversation with Chevy?
Well, I took away from basically what we've been hearing sort of subtly from the entire team when we have players on this year, and it's nice, but it's not what it's about. And I think that's a good thing with this team. I mentioned to Kevin on the show, I said, throughout the year going back to training camp, we've had Josh Morrissey on, Adam Lowry. In the summer, we had some players on. We had Kyle Connor on when he was named a star of the week or star of the month. And they all, without being asked and just talking about the season, say, we feel we like the core. It's great that we got the two contracts with our key vets. We're very happy about that. But they all, without, enticing them, say, we're well aware that over the past 4 or 5 years as a core, we haven't accomplished anything. And so I asked Kevin Cheveldayoff about that. I said, there's six games to go, and how do you approach them? And he said, well, it's all about preparing for the season. Like, if there's rest to be, or the postseason, if there's rest to be had, or this or that. But what I took away from it is he kind of echoed that. He said, and I never thought of it this way, Derek, but he said, when I asked him about these players sort of, unintentionally just bringing up their underachieving in the postseason the last 4 or 5 seasons as a core, he said, when you draft a core and you keep them around and you re-sign most of them and they're still here, and they start growing up together and they start going to each other's weddings, they want to win. But they want to win together. And he goes, there is a little bit of this, yes, we haven't performed in the playoffs like we wanted to, but this is a core group that, and I don't think of this. You go year to year, do you think, can they re-sign these guys? But to him, he was kind of like, they're kind of like a family, right? These guys all grew up together. They were all drafted and they're all a team, but they're now all friends and going to each other's weddings and they want to win. So, that's what I think is going on. This was a goal, and I even brought up with Kevin Cheveldayoff specifically, like the distance traveled between April in Vegas and back to Winnipeg, and then through the summer, and then to training camp, and then all of a sudden a couple big names re-sign, and then the fact that they got out of the gate and were in first at one point, and now they're in the top three in the division and heading to the postseason, but it's not the normal year, let's be honest. This season ended with a thud. The coach said what he said. A lot weren't happy. The captain, former captain, was shipped out, bought out. A person that I keep hearing, without the name Dubois being said, I keep hearing from Bonus over and over this year that, we all want to be here this year. Everybody wants to be here. And I think that's a direct shot over somebody who didn't. But there's an underlining tone to this that they might get knocked out in the first round, Derek. We're going to get into that in six games. But there's an underlining tone there that it's time to do more than just make the playoffs. It's time to do some damage. And that's what I took from his thoughts. He's very humble, said, he's enjoyed the season, and you never know what you're going to get in any year, injuries or whatever. But he made a couple big trades to solidify this lineup. But it just seemed to me in our whole conversation today, he was just sort of, this is nice. and we got a game tomorrow in Minnesota, but 6 games from now is what it's what we're really focused on. So I'm interested to see what they're going to do.
And Jim Toth with us on the sports show. And it comes to what we'll talk about over the next 6 games is, okay, well, how much do they try to chase down Colorado and how much do they rest up for presumably Colorado in the playoffs? Rick Bowness, in some of his clips today, he said he's seen guys lose the edge, were his words, because they rested down the stretch. And I mean, Rick Bowness has seen everything in hockey. I wonder what he means by that, because I kind of don't buy that hockey players go to the playoffs and don't want to win the Stanley Cup.
Well, it's not about not wanting to. It's about, you know, working up and firing on all cylinders. I'll tell you a story from my American Hockey League days that was centered around Guy Boucher, who's an assistant coach again, I believe, in Tampa Bay. And he was the head coach in Montreal's system. And he was in Montreal's farm team. And I was covering the Manitoba Moose, and he had P.K. Subban as a rookie. And P.K. Subban as a rookie in the American Hockey League was outstanding. He was playing like 25, 26 minutes a night. And we asked him about that going into the playoff series against the Moose, that we noticed his ice time went way down. And he said, here's what I'm doing. And keep in mind, I believe Guy Boucher has a psychology degree as well as two others as a coach. But he said, the last month of the season, I started dialing his time back 2 minutes, 3 minutes a game in the first week and then the second week. And it was down from like 25, 26 minutes a night to about 18, 19. And the first week, he didn't say anything. The second week, he's kind of looking at me when I'm not sending him over the boards as often. By the third week, he's just, when it's not his turn again, he's looking at me and with a growl on his face. And the regular season ended. We're about to start the playoffs here in Manitoba. And I called him into my office and I just looked at him and said, now I need you. And he looked at me and he looked up and he said, oh. And then, of course, they won the Calder Cup that year. I believe Carey Price came in from Tri-Cities and they got past Manitoba, who was the favorite in the opening round, and they just went on a run. And he played like 28 minutes a night in that playoffs. But it just, I don't think Rick Bowness is playing psychology games to that degree. And I don't think you can do that with veteran players, right? They're not fooled. They've been to the playoffs before. You can do that with a rookie superstar. But my point to that is I don't think you can just turn it on. I'm more concerned not about resting guys down this last 6 games. I'm concerned about how they're playing the 60 minutes that they're in the games, the next 6 games. So you guys were doing it on the post game all this week. We've been talking about it for a month. This team doesn't have a lull in the second periods. They take second periods off, and you can't do that in the playoffs. That's when, if you're tight in the first and tight in the third, that's the difference in a game. It's much like they got to get this power play going. So I think if there's bumps and bruises, they're going to rest guys. But I'm a little bit on Rick's side of, and I think it's a bonus to the team, whether he'll say this or not, that they're in third in the division but could still catch Colorado. And there's a mathematical chance at Dallas, but I don't think that's going to happen. But I think that's a great carrot over this last 6 games to go. Not only do you want to be playing well and building up to the playoffs, the old IE, now I need you, but there's something you can still accomplish here. I think it would be a different story with this team and a different philosophy with Rick Bowness if they were in first place in the division by 7 points and made the playoffs and had 6 games to go. I think one of the best coaching jobs, and I can't believe he's one of Jack Adams, is John Cooper with Tampa Bay. I do not know how they went to 3 straight Stanley Cups and how he got the most out of those guys in February, March, when they've been there, done that. And it's the toughest job to me is having a really good Stanley Cup winning team and keeping them motivated in the game 60 to 75. And there was a year where he benched Nikita Kucherov for a third period. He's benched Steven Stamkos. It's a fine line. But I think what Rick Bowness is saying there is right. Like, to give a guy a game off when you're still fighting for second in the division just because you want to rest them, I don't think that'll work. If a guy's hurting and he's going to benefit from this in with 2 games left or the last game of the season, I could see it. But over the next 4 to 5 games, I think Rick rolls out the lineup. I think they try to chase down Colorado. And I think mostly they just focus on not having a period off, but maybe having a part of a period off and getting your game back in that period.
Yeah, there's a point where as a coach, as a fan of a team, I just want them to embrace the reality of it, right? You're 4 points back of Colorado. You would, in the situation where you catch them on points, you're going to have the tiebreaker. So you just need to catch 4 more points than them. But the odds of doing that are not great in my mind. So I my focus, if I'm the coach, would be, okay, how are we at as close to 100% going into the playoffs?
Yeah.
Whatever,
I agree with that.
Whatever that takes.
Yeah. I'd be more impressed with them if they're 3-3 and playing well over the next six than if they went 4-2 and got, you know, a couple 5-minute power plays and won games that way, even though they may not have deserved it.
100%.
I think that's what Rick's focused on too. Like,
Ottawa game, right? That Ottawa game, they lose it, but they had two glorious chances to win it, and you get robbed and you miss a wide open goal. And I go, yeah, to me, that's a moral W. And I know people hate that, but to me, that's a game they go, yeah, we won that game.
And you know what? It's so great you brought up that Ottawa game, because Ottawa's out of it, and they played the way they played in that game. And that's what the Jets need to do. The Jets have solidified a playoff spot. The next six games, they have to be what Ottawa did to them. I think the Jets are a better team. I thought they played well in that game. But Ottawa came in, and that first period, and a lot of fight in their game and not giving up, they have nothing to play for, and it's been a disastrous year this year. I think they're the most disappointing team in the National Hockey League because they went and signed a goalie to a big deal. They had some real key pieces. They didn't even smell the playoffs.
Yeah,
and they were supposed to be a team that pushed in a lot, and I was one of them that thought they might get in this year. So for them to play the way they did with nothing on the line for a team that was still fighting for first in their division, what's lost in that loss to Ottawa is not just the Jets played well, but what Ottawa did is what I think Rick Bowness wants to see from his team over the next six games.
He's Jim Toth, the host of the Jim Toth Show. Terrific. And of course, Jets at noon, and he will have all your Jets talk. Final six games, including the teams that they'll play in the playoffs. They got to go visit, Dallas and Colorado. So it's going to be interesting down the stretch before they come back home. And then whiteouts will be upon us. Thank you, brother. I appreciate you giving me some time.
Anytime. Great being on with you, as always, and great to see you this week. I didn't have to feel your face because I haven't seen you in years. I was like, no, that's him. I recognize him from the last time I saw him. Great job and great listening to you this week, DT.
Thank you, my friend. He is Jim Toth. Nice enough to join us on the 680 CJOB Sports Show.
Well, thank you very much for listening to the CJOB Sports Show podcast. If you like what you heard, guess what? You can hear more every weeknight on CJOB from 6:30 to 9 p.m. Thanks again for tuning in. Subscribe if you'd like. We're available on iTunes and other places, I'd imagine. So farewell until we meet again.
Come on and thanks for all the fish. So sad that it should come to this. We try to warn you all.